This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Believes to be of quality. But there is, unseen by most, an episodic horror-based TV show. A show that still holds up. A show called Tales from the Dark Side.
Have you ever wondered how all those bestsellers get published? Did you ever think it was talent or art had anything to do with it?
No.
Magic.
What?
Magic. Pure and simple.
Welcome back to Talks from the Dark Side, the podcast where we talk about Tales from the Dark Side, the horror anthology television show created by Richard Rubenstein and George Romero. I'm Joel Escola.
I'm Sean O'Rourke.
And I'm Chris Barr.
Today we're talking about Printer's Devil, directed by John Harrison, written by John Goulart and John Harrison, with an original air date of February 2nd, 1986.
This episode is obviously brought to us by the great man, John Harrison himself.
Yes,
it seems like he once
checked
again.
A lot of boxes on this one, writing, directing, and I'm sure he did the music in some capacity.
I don't know.
I would hope, right?
Sometimes he does.
Thinking about it now, it's like, one, it's like not that memorable, even if you did. Sorry, John.
Yeah. Sure, but in the music at least. Yeah.
I don't know. This one's okay. I kind of like this one.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we get John Harrison, which is always a fun, you know, seeing his name in the credits here. Most of the time.
Most of the time. I don't want to show my hand yet. I have some thoughts about this episode that may be accurate or just a lot of me jumping to conclusions. But when we start talking about the episode, I'll explain why I feel that way. We'll see how Joe and Chris feel about
I think
what I'm
we have pretty similar thoughts.
Possibly. but people that have seen the episode might know where we're going with this, but we'll get there.
This one's got a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot, there's comedy in this, but it's not so heavy-handed. I feel like this next stretch of episodes are pretty on the more serious side, especially the ending of this.
Yeah, it's like this is the last one we have that's like even has some jokes here and there.
Yeah.
But the next few we have after this make up for
all the laughs that we've been having.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I was going to say, without putting the cart before the horse, I think this is definitely a comedy episode. And the fact that you're saying that, maybe it just doesn't fucking work if you're not laughing that much. But this is 100% supposed to be a comedy episode. I just think it's a very dark comedy episode.
A dark comedy, yeah, for sure.
Especially the way that this writer, this lead character, gets put through the ringer. But before we get into that, I think Chris has that Fangoria description for us.
Yeah, so every episode I'll read from the official Fangoria guide to Tales from the Dark Side, and their official synopsis goes, an unpublished author turns to an unorthodox literary agent in hopes of selling his work. However, the agent's formula for success requires ritual sacrifices, both animal and human.
Hmm.
That's a nice tease.
Actually, that's pretty good. I mean, that's kind of giving away the goat.
Yeah.
It does,
literally.
But, yeah, yeah.
Where's the goat, guys?
Right. Is he going to eat the goat?
Yeah.
But in the scheme of things, like, yeah, they're spoiling something, but you're really, there is a literal carrot on that one if you don't know what's going to happen.
So we're introduced to Larry Minetti. He plays Junior Harmon, and he was on Magnum PI. That was like his big TV show.
Yeah, that was like his big claim to fame. And I, you know, doing the IMDb, like, links, I go, what else was he in?
Yeah.
He was in not only the original Magnum PI, but I didn't know they rebooted Magnum P.I.
either.
But he was in that too.
Okay.
So cool.
Huh. Good for you. Yeah.
Was it a true reboot though? Because just on that thought, I just kind of went through the original run of Columbo, and then I'm like on the 80s ones, and it's like clearly like, hey, this was really successful. Let's bring it back. But it's like so different. It's like hard to wrap your head around. So I wonder if Magnum P.I. they were like, this show was popular. Let's bring it back. But it's like so, if you know what I'm talking about, any Columbo fans out there.
I feel like it's also, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like a semi-parody because they did that. They've been doing that a lot.
Yeah.
Even like the Miami Vice stuff.
And also it ties into, you know, thinking of an earlier Tales episode.
Yeah.
It's like maybe it got canceled. Somebody else wanted it back.
Oh.
If you see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, the aliens came down.
Yeah.
And they called up Larry and they gave him some of those vitamins and they made a new Magnum
P.I. You need to reboot Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
Please. Our civilization depends on it.
You have to bring back Magnum P.I. Ah, race depends on it.
With this schlub.
Yeah.
So yeah, Junior is a struggling writer, and when I say struggling, I mean like a literal starving artist.
Yeah.
He's like on the phone with his editor trying to like beat a fucking check out of him for something that he like did 2 weeks ago, and he's like, he's got no food in the fridge.
Oh, he's got a banana.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Moldy banana.
Orange juice and a moldy banana, that's it.
And like how, this scene especially, it's like, you know, working freelance, you know how it goes, trying to track, you know, chase people down and owe you money.
You
it's
feel like, it. You feel it in this
So this
scene.
One, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it like gets, that's what I was saying, trying to say earlier, like this one gets under my skin and it might be like, I'll get to my final thought. But yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, he's checking his mailbox. Oh, they should have had a check 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I'm waiting on one now.
Speaking of, yeah.
He like calls up the editor and he's like, put the fucking editor on the phone. I need my check. Like I haven't eaten in 3 days. And she's like, oh, can you home, please?
Who is this?
Secretary.
He's like, you know damn well who it is.
Yeah. It's like, he's not important. They don't care.
No, they don't care.
Yeah.
So they hang up on him and he's screwed.
Well, and they kind of echo this radio commercial, because when the episode starts, right before he goes to his refrigerator, it's playing as kind of a nod to the audience, like, oh, the sales guy that can fix all your problems, can sell all your shit.
Yeah.
But you're just like, you know, again, as an audience member, you kind of see where this is going, but he kind of ignores it. Second time they play this ad, his fucking ears peak up. He's like, oh.
Yeah, it's the birth of targeted ads right there.
Yeah, quite
we're listening.
Are you a struggling artist that doesn't have any money? You don't need to know how to write. Just come down here and we'll fucking sell your garbage. No problem.
That's pretty much what
it
says.
That's what he says.
It's some Beatle-ass juice shit where it's like, I'm watching you. I have all your list of problems right here. I'm just reading them off to you. This is absolutely not targeted at you, Mr. Writer you. Wink, wink, wink.
Charles Knapp will definitely eat anything you want him to eat.
Exactly.
You know how we do the jobs, especially as like an independent contractor, you're doing all these jobs, but like the real goal in your life is to, you know, in my case is to do like movies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Or even in yours. And in this guy's, he doesn't want to write like stupid puff pieces or anything for any magazines and stuff. He wants to write a novel.
Yeah.
Something that speaks to him and something that, because he's, you know, comes from his heart.
That's what his passion is.
That's what his passion is. So he has this novel called Into the Void that he's been trying to publish, and he's been trying to get through to all these people. So he talks to this editor just real quick, because I want to mention her because she comes back.
Right.
And he's like, oh, you know, have you got a chance to read Enter the Void? And she's like, look, you need to get a publisher. And she's like, he's like, I can't get a manager until I get a publisher. And I can't get a publisher until I get
a manager.
Get
a manager, yeah.
Right. And he's like, she's like, well, you fucked. Goodbye.
That's it.
And that's that.
And then it's like, this kind of threw me off a little, and maybe I was overthinking this, but I think the episode's fucking with you a little, because he puts his head down, and I want to say, unless I misremembered this, they even throw a mirage effect on the screen. So I'm like, is he fucking dreaming? Because then that's when he suddenly gets this radio thing playing that he's going to get help, but then it never really goes there, so I think I'm overthinking it. But
I didn't even catch the mirage effect.
So I could have missed that. I could have misinterpreted that. But I thought he was dreaming for like 10 minutes of the episode, and then like things keep progressing, and I'm like, oh, no, I'm just overthinking this. It would be interesting if it was a dream and he wakes up and nothing happened, but
it's still cool. It's like even if you think you saw a mirage effect or some kind of like transition there, it's like that still is a neat effect to even think you saw.
Yeah.
Because it does sort of play into that, like, is even the radio ad, is like, is this real?
I guess that's where my brain was going, whether it actually happened or not. So I was kind of in that. Tails was sucking me in, I guess. Right?
There was definitely an element there, like when the voice is coming out of the radio, it seems like it almost like hears what's going on in the room. And it's like, hey,
Alexa, find me a job.
right, yeah.
Charles, now find me a job.
The original
Why didn't you
Alexa.
Say show, kiddo?
Hey, Xbox, find me a job.
Oh, God, remember that? Hey, Xbox, that was the thing. But yeah, you're right. And I guess, like, the point is that, yeah, it is ominous. And it is kind of this, like, booming voice out of the skies in the form of a radio. And that is literally the point. Because when he goes to see this guy, the picture is quickly painted.
So he hears this thing on the radio and he finally gets desperate enough. And he goes down to the office to meet Alex Kellaway, played by Charles Knapp.
Oh, yeah. And what is with this office? It's like he walks in. There's, like, the little waiting room. And it's like, looks like the DMV for a second. Kind of.
I mean, I offhandedly mentioned Beetlejuice, but it kind of makes me think of Beetlejuice, which, again, is a parody of DMV, but you're right, Chris. It's like, what is even happening? There's, like, secretary that works for this guy that's, like, intentionally over-the-top eccentric to throw people off, I think?
It looks like he's about to get some bootleg plastic surgery.
Exactly, yeah.
Like Dr. Nick's about to walk in from The Simpsons, obviously.
Some cheap dentistry's about to go down.
Yeah, he looks nervous, like, ah, did I come to the right place? And even, like, when that secretary woman comes out.
Rosie,
again, her attire just is throwing him off. She's like, you're next! He's like, ah, I think I came to the wrong place!
Yeah, she looks like Cyndi Lauper or something.
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
But she looked at the thing, she's like, yeah, next or whatever. She brings him in and Charles Knapp is there. Now, if you don't know who Charles Knapp is, I mean, if you're watching the video version, you'll see who he is. But Charles Knapp is the guy. I know him from Twilight Zone, the movie.
Oh, he's the guy who is he in that?
He's the guy on the plane with John Lithgow in the Nightmare at 20,000 Feet episode. And he's like the cop. And he's like, when John Lithgow.
Did he steal the gun from?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
When John Lithgow freaks out, he's like, it's claustrophobia. he's like, they'd rather see the plane crash to the ground. They'd rather fall to the ground and stay inside. That's the guy.
So that guy saved John Lithgow's life because I'm pretty sure he holds on to him when he's hanging out the window.
Well, he tries to shoot the fucking gremlin.
And he's been in a bunch of stuff, but between that and it, he's also in The Dark Backward. That's another one.
I didn't see that.
That's a fun one.
Yeah, I never saw that.
You haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
That's like
I haven't
right
seen
in,
everything.
It's like right in. You I might. Know. It's probably on the shelf.
There's still gems for me to discover.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, folks.
So Charles Knapp is in there as Alex Kellaway, and like right off the bat, he's like, come on in here, Junior, my boy, sit on down. He is like an extremely large version of W.C. Fields.
Yeah, exactly. Just very exaggerated and like over the top almost.
He's like, you want something to eat? He's got this whole fucking smorgasbord in front of him, like different cheeses and grapes and shit and meat.
And he's eating, I think, every time we see him. On like in a scene,
he is like the epitome of like gluttonous.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
and greed.
That they show him at one point straight up like Caesar with the fucking grapes laying on a chair. It's like oh my god,
he's in his bed later with like a fur blanket over him and shit. And he's like, Jim, my boy, don't anybody tell you that there's a starving artist bullshit. Forget that stuff. He's like, that's just a way to say that they're mediocre and they can't hack it basically as artists.
Okay,
because they're not getting jobs. Basically, he's like, he hands him his manuscript and he sits down. He's like, he gives him the End of the Void thing. He's like, all right. He's like, and he takes it, and just fucking throws it away. And he's like, you're going to write me a Western, okay?
Yeah, just throws it. He doesn't care. He's like, oh, I need a Western. That's all.
Yeah, and he's basically like, oh, I don't write Westerns or whatever. And he's like,
I'm a real writer.
I don't write that bullshit.
I'm above that trash.
And he's like, yeah, sure you're not. Okay, whatever you say. Then he like pulls out like this wooden box with like this like tin can phone in it. There's like two phone lines hooked up to a fucking tin can.
Yeah, this weird little machine in a little case. And he's like, what the hell is that? This measures your S rating.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
This is a Scientology reference straight up, by the way.
Is it really?
That's what they do. They hold this fucking device and it's like this. It's got to be Scientology. That's the only thing I can think of. You grab this thing and it tells you how much energy you are and then give Xenu money.
Yeah. In this case, it's how much money you're going to make.
Well, that's what it is because he grabs that can and he's like, oh, the meter went up. This is going to be some good stuff. You're going to make me good money.
It's like a ride at the boardwalk.
Yeah, kind of.
He said it's like 150 plush.
Yeah. And I get 20%.
And he's like, well, you're going to make 120 because I get 20%. There you go.
Right. And then he is like, oh, does anybody owe you any money? And he's like, yeah, well this editor, I've been trying to get this $1,200. He's like, hold on. What's their name? And he like tells him and he's like, hold on. And it's almost like he has like a bank. He has like all the fucking drawers there with names on them.
He's got a whole wall.
It's like a hitting painting.
Yeah.
And he like hits it, and it's like a secret door.
Has the guy's name on it.
Yeah.
Pulls it out. What is that? Like a cloth he has inside?
Yeah, it's like a card catalog that he opens, and it's like a handkerchief.
Right. And like when he first walked in the room, you're not thinking anything of it, but the secretary like told him to take his tie off.
Well, she spills champagne on him.
Oh, that it's like a ruse.
By accident.
Yeah, because she's like, Junior, my boy, we're going to make you a bunch of money. And he's like, let's celebrate.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah.
Oh, give me your tie. Yeah, let me take your tie in the other room. It's obvious.
Yeah, you're right. But then when you see this, like, lockbox get open and him pull out, oh, this thing would be convenient. I knew I should have saved it. You're like, oh, this is nefarious, but you don't know why.
Yeah. He dumps out a box of King Willy shit on the table. And there's like a bone, skull, and a baby doll that he uses for his like voodoo.
Yeah,
he's like it's magic, chum. This is how we do it. And he like wraps the doll in the scarf, and he calls his editor up. And he's like, hey, how you doing? I was like, hey, you owe my new client some money, you scumbag. And he's like,
as he's talking to him, the guy just keeps giving him excuses, like line after line. Oh, I'm gonna put it in the mail. I'll get it to him.
I always pay my clients. My daughter needs braces.
Yeah.
You know, it was a hard day at work today.
Again, going back to like freelancing, independent work. It's like, how often do you hear that line?
All the time.
Just not the daughter needs braces.
No.
You know, never heard that one.
But bullshit.
I also like how I'm just gonna call him Harvey. Harvey makes his call and he's like, oh, it's $1,200. Like he doesn't say all this, but he's like, yeah, you owe him $1,500. Yeah. And the guy's like got a look on his face, but it's like, no, he needs his 20%. So he's saying it's more than it actually is.
Yeah.
And he's hitting this fucking voodoo doll with this nail or this toothpick, or it's hurting the person on the line is the point.
He's like, how's your ulcer? And he's like, oh, it's doing all right. And he like stabs him in
my ulcer.
It's
like, I don't want you to get a headache, bud. And he stabs the fucking doll right in the head, and he's like, hangs up the phone on him.
I think it's some of the funniest comedy in this episode is anything with these voodoo dolls. And especially just, again, it's just like this cheap ass like rubber doll.
Yeah. It's that like you a baby doll.
That you could get at the dollar store. I guess it doesn't matter, right?
You just need the personal effect.
Yeah, wrapping. It's like I guess it's a physical like representation of the person. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole voodoo thing you get into here.
I mean, Charles Lee Ray knows all about it. So
yeah, right.
We'd have to ask him.
Your own personal mojo, doc.
But it's fun though. It's like now we're setting up, it's like we have voodoo at play. We get another voodoo episode.
Yeah.
Which is like, I'm all for it.
Hey, sign me up. I mean, this is another one of those sell your soul for your art kind of things.
Yeah.
Just like we had in the Satanic Piano.
Right.
He hangs out with that guy who made the fuck. What was his name?
Oh, I cannot remember.
Yeah. The guy with the long hair with the skullet.
What was his name?
Oswald Cobblepot.
Yeah, Oswald
close
Cobblepot.
Enough. Yeah. Yeah.
We had a name. It's been a while since we filmed that.
Yeah, they're hanging out. He was that guy's agent for a little while.
Yeah.
But he's like, the good book says you got to do some animal sacrifice for
the
me,
good
kiddo.
Book. Yeah, it's like this thing that's like this big.
His fucking Necronomicon. He fucking slams on the table. He's like looking through it. He's like, huh, you're 35 and you're 6 feet tall and you got brown eyes. Well, it says animal sacrifice here. So you got to kill some animals and then we're all good to go.
And your dreams come true.
And your dreams
That's all.
As I was watching this episode, I'm like, I wish magic were kind of true.
Yeah.
Who says it isn't?
This is how you get famous, Junior, my boy. It's all magic. That's what we do. We use the magic to make people famous. You think anybody wants to read this shit? No, we gotta put a spell on them.
Yeah, he says, how do you think all the bestsellers get published? So it's like alluding to, it's like, he's the publisher for all these artists and writers.
I kind of love that aspect of it. It's just this big, you know, I'm saying it's about Harvey Weinstein or about executives, but it's kind of just like poking fun at the whole industry on some level when you really start thinking about it. It's kind of genius.
So he goes home and the last time we saw his apartment, it was in shambles, and now it's all nice and shit. He's wearing a suit. He's now dating
he painted the walls?
Yeah. He's now dating that editor Brenda that he had called in the first place to pitch his book.
Well, the devil or whatever he is calls him. Oh, I used a little magic to have her be interested in you. I hope that's okay. And he's like, okay, yeah.
He's like, Junior, my boy, I killed a fucking ox and a tiger, and I put them together, and you know, now she wants to fuck you too.
Now you get a date with Miss Hardcastle.
Yeah. Yeah, so he calls him up and he's like, Junior, my boy, I got that chick Brenda there. She's pretty good, huh? Well, guess what? I need a spy thriller whipped up, baby. Something in the Middle East. Doesn't fucking matter. Who cares? Nobody reads that shit. Anyway, I'm sending over a goat.
Yeah, my assistant sent a goat over.
Right, because it's like, Not he doesn't want him to sacrifice animals. It's more like, well, we're sacrificing animals, and part of your contract is I might need those animals one day, so they can just hang out in your fucking apartment, I guess.
He like stocks up on all these exotic animals because he's not sure what he's going to need for the for each spell.
He's
that
covering
happens.
All the bases, and then his date, Miss Hardcastle, she's looking around. She's like, oh, you're an animal lover. I love that. That's what's going on.
6 months later, and the house, like, is, Sean, you mentioned before, was like Ace fucking Ventura.
It's like Ace, yeah, oh yeah, big time.
Because, like, he's got cages all over. He's got, like, a fox and a tiger cub and a skunk and some other bullshit. Yeah. Like,
all he needs is, like, the fish in the bathtub you know, all that
the penguins
stuff.
penguins in the freezer, right. In the fridge.
Well, they come by, like, the secretary now, like, dressed differently again, just updating her look, I suppose, and now she's got a fucking baby cub, a cub black bear. She's like, all right, the master said here's another one. He's like, I can't sacrifice a fucking bear. What am I doing here?
Well, it comes down to choosing between Brenda and all the animals.
Yeah.
And he has to have them around because he has to make the sacrifice to write the scripts and pitch the movie deals and get all the money.
Here's my question. If he's making this kind of money selling these scripts for $100,000 for TV rights, movie rights, again, I'm kind of beating the system by suggesting this, but have like an apartment for the animals and get a different fucking place to live. Is that difficult?
Well, I guess
he's making hand over fist kind of, you know, that's what's implied.
I mean, he is in the same apartment. I guess maybe you're right. Keep him in a different place.
I mean, I'm breaking the episode also, by saying that, but.
Well, also, it's like there's also a, you look at it from the angle of like greed.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
like how much is enough?
It's like, never enough.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, that's a message in the, you know, especially with the ending that we're going to get to. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you have like the idea of like greed and like, it's never enough and you need more and you need more and more and more. Where it's like, now he's has all these animals in the apartment and it's getting so bad that he has to choose.
I mean, it smells got to be horrible, right? Like these things, he's not cleaning up after them, right?
So he goes down to Alex and he's like, look, Alex, I can't do this anymore. He's like, my wife's going to leave me. All these animals are too much. He's like, I can't do it.
Yeah, kind of gives him an ultimatum. Like, he marches down there all, like, you know, thinking he's going to tell him off.
Junior, you got to kill that bear. I just sold this pre-movie deal or whatever.
Also, like you just said, he goes down there thinking he's going to tell him, like, what's what. But, like, bro, you don't have any of the cards. Like, that guy has all of your fucking cards.
And
you have no room to stand on.
He was there at his office watching him when he was on the phone with the guy.
He
saw the voodoo doll from the other guy.
You watched him do the fucking voodoo. You're killing animals.
Yeah. He's gaslighting himself.
For so magic.
What's happening here? I'm just so
this is
stupid.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
He's trying to convince himself that everything he did was the right decision. So. Yeah.
So he tells Alex this, and then Alex is like, Rosie, get me that tie. So fast forward, and now like Junior is completely broke. He's still living with Brenda. They had to like sell all of their possessions. They haven't got any, neither of them have gotten any jobs or anything. So they get desperate again, and he calls Alex back, and he's like, "Alex, you need a spy thriller. You need a romance with fast women and all this shit." And he's like,
"Because he keeps asking for that fast women.
Don't need any of those. You know what? I've been thinking about you. I've been thinking about the voice. He also has headaches, and you see Charles Knapp like squeezing the fucking doll
it's like
head
right in the face.
He keeps going, "Oh man."
I just want to note that because that was fun. He's like, "I think you know what, Junior, my boy, Into the Void can be a smash hit. What do you say?" He's like, "Holy shit." He's like, "You're going to publish my novel?" He's like, "Yeah, I'll go on tour. I'll go on tour for 3 years if you want me to."
Yeah.
And he's like, "A sacrifice?
But what's it going to take?"
Okay. And he's like, and then you don't hear what he says. And then the absolute total dark turn of this episode is that he goes up behind Brenda and she's like, "Oh, is everything going to be okay?" He's like, "Everything's going to be just fine, sweetheart." And he pulls out the dagger and obviously it's insinuated that he's going to kill
her. And right here, we have like a really slow shot down where it shows the two of them. Like he's hugging her from behind.
Yeah.
And it just pans down and he pulls out this weird like ceremonial dagger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Credits.
They showed it earlier. I mean, any fucking knife in the hand is going to sell the point home. But it is specifically one they mentioned earlier for sacrifice. And it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
This scene, like, it's all funny and goofy and shit for the duration of the episode, but, like, all of a sudden it gets super serious at this scene.
In the last 10 seconds.
And it just made me feel some feelings because I was like, oh, you're going to kill this woman that you love to publish your novel?
Yeah.
And it was just like, I don't know, like, it really...
Yeah, like, even his phone call with them, like, right before this, it's, yeah, like, it's alluded that it's, like, for something big like this to happen, it needs a bigger sacrifice.
Yeah, well...
So now, like, animals aren't enough.
He's like, we're moving on to bigger mammals! Yeah, yeah. And then finally, of course, human sacrifice.
Right.
I mean, I wasn't really shocked at all. I kind of saw it coming a mile away. I don't know if that's just me seeing a lot of these types of shows at this point, but, like, as soon as he got off the phone and it was, like, just a room of him and the wife, and it's like, all right, if he doesn't, like... say something about killing her, or they don't imply it, I'm going to be disappointed. Yeah. The way it's done is very effective.
That's
I just
what
feel
I mean.
Like it's like the second the single shot of just her in the chair, it's like, oh, she's fucking dead.
Yep.
Yeah. And the whole punchline is like selling, is having to kill somebody to get your art noticed or like famous. Well, yeah. Basically.
Your loved one.
Yeah.
And it's also like what's most important. It's like your career or like someone that's like you're in love with.
Which is like a big message of the episode, which is fucked up. But with that, let's get into some final thoughts. What did we think about this episode?
I think this episode's okay. There's a lot about it I like, but I don't love it. I mean, it's a pretty good episode. It's like right in the middle of the road for me. I like the psychological elements of this episode, like the way that this executive or whatever you want to call him, this devil in disguise, is fucking with this guy. But then it does kind of come down to that final like greed kind of always wins, for lack of a better term. And I kind of like that because even though I'm kind of like focused a lot on like that parody element, which again, I don't have any evidence whether that was the case or not. It just really feels like that's what they're kind of leaning into, which takes me out of it a little bit. It's kind of hard for me to kind of detach my brain from the reality of Harvey Weinstein was a thing in film for the last 40 years and people just didn't do anything about it for decades. Again, maybe that's not what John and the rest of the Tales crew were going for, but it's hard for me to separate that thought from my head, which maybe isn't fair to the episode, but that's kind of how I end up where I'm at with my final thought, so I just want to say that. But yeah, this is definitely one I would watch again easily. It's very entertaining. It's a comedy episode that I don't think necessarily nails the comedy, but enough of it is kind of hits me. Not emotionally, but it's like, all right, that was pretty funny. Like maybe like 10% of it's really hitting me where it needs to, but that 10% is really funny. And then there's that final dark twist kind of is like, all right, this is Tales. This is kind of what we want if they're going to go down this road. It's not going to compare to Comet Watch. I'm not saying that, but it's definitely nowhere near Did You Know Jason, not to always reference that one. It's a solid ass episode to me.
It's like, I didn't really like it, but I do appreciate an episode starting off light and you think it's going to go one way and be like, oh, it's one of these.
Yeah.
And then takes a darker turn. My thing is, I wish it took the darker turn earlier.
I could see that.
It's like,
yeah,
it feels like a long episode. A
little too late.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't go where I'd like it to go personally, but, and by the time we get there, it's like the credits are up and it's like, not saying I want to see like him keep sacrificing people or anything like that, but it's like, I feel like that twist could have been a little earlier than like those last couple seconds.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's like ending on a, you know, a dour note like that is one thing, but it's like, I wanted more out of it and it just didn't go the places I wanted it to.
Sure.
So it's like, all right, you lost me a little bit there. I appreciate it. It's like got some fun parts, but overall it's like not, I don't know. I'd skip it.
I like this one. It's definitely not my favorite by any stretch, but I like the concept that it deals with. And again, this isn't the first episode, nor the last episode we're gonna get that involves magic, voodoo, the devil, and being successful in life. And I always think these stories are kind of great because they're almost tantalizing in a way, where it's like, if somebody came to you tomorrow and was like, Joey, my boy, you're going to make a bajillion dollars and you're going to make that fucking movie you want to make, baby. But, you got to kill this puppy. Would I do it? I don't know if I would do it.
Yeah.
But it's entertained when I watch shit like this and I'm like, man, what would I do?
What if?
Sure,
you know, what if? And what if magic was real and it could actually change the course of the trajectory of your professional career, right? I like Charles Knapp in it. I think he's funny as hell. Now, he's not the devil in this, per se.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of hard. I mean, if I just could remember the damn character's name, it'd be easy for me to just say it.
He's just a guy. His name's Alex.
It feels like he's kind of like the devil incarnate, like not actually, but it's like there's a term for it that's escaping me, like the wolf in sheep's clothing kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, he's your best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
He's almost sort of like
a cartoon wolf.
Yeah.
In a way. Like I could picture like the cartoons of like the wolf that's like up to no good.
Yeah, exactly, no, for sure. Exactly. And that's what I guess that's what I'm saying. Like he's painted as this like kind of jolly, like fun loving, like
yeah.
you know,
chubby guy
who wants to, he's your best friend. Ah, I'll make a deal with you. Yeah. Well, everybody's, it's all going to work out fine.
Like, shake your hand while stabbing you in the back.
My little chickadee, you know?
Right.
Very W.C. Fields-esque. I think I'm gonna agree with Chris where like it takes these funny turns, mostly dark comedy stuff. You know, by the time we get to the part where it's like, oh shit, that really hits, it's over. You know, he says something along the lines before. He's like, you can't eat self-respect, Junior. And that's the big thing of this, where it's like, you know, he's struggling with being true to himself and true to his art and putting that out there. And it makes you question, like, if you could harness that power and make your dream come to life, you know, would you do it?
Yeah.
What would you do?
Yeah. It's like how far is too far?
Yeah. How far is
too far to achieve what you want to achieve?
Yeah. Mm. I think it's a good episode. I think it's fine, and I think all the characters are likable, and it's an easy watch, and it's an enjoyable watch.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris is still skipping it.
Yeah, I'll skip it. It's like I'm skipping ahead a couple more episodes.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
Only one more.
No, I'm not saying it's bad. Yeah. It's just, but that's the you know, the fun thing about like discussing it here. It's like we're each going to have our own outlook on it, and like, you know, it's like we're each going to have our own way that we're coming at these episodes, and like that's the beauty of talking about these.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
you know, you're going to have something to say about it that I didn't notice, and like vice versa, and things, you know.
Yeah, that's the best part.
And just one final a little cherry I'll add to your thing, that what you just said, Chris, is like if you are actually marathoning the whole series, it's not like you're just dealing with like those 20 episodes. Like there's quite a few. So I can understand skipping 10, 12 episodes over yeah. the course of, what is it, 50 or 60 episodes. I get it. I totally get it.
In the overall scope of the series and all four seasons, there's a lot to chew through here.
Sure. Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, do I want to experience this one again? It's like I get it. It's like, I know what else is out there.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
yeah.
other ones I'm going to be chasing after more than this one.
I totally get that.
And I think that's what I mean.
With that being said, I would say this is like a 5 minute inner skipper.
Okay.
Where it's
you
like,
give up on it
where you're watching
minutes.
It, you're like, yeah, I know what happens. Okay.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's this one.
Yeah, it's this one. You know.
But if you haven't seen it, I think there's value here to see it as part of the series.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you haven't seen any of these, you should watch them all.
And, of course, your own absolutely.
Ones, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the beauty of this series and in anthology series as a whole. It's like there's always something. Every episode is a different, you know, spice. So it's like there's all sorts of things here. I know we always say it, but that's the fun of anthologies. It's like there's always a different story.
You get all those different flavors, man. Yeah. But yeah, man, do you have some Midnight Madness stuff coming up?
Yes, lots more Midnight Madness up ahead. We're doing them about every 2 weeks now over at the Basie Center Cinemas in Red Bank, New Jersey. So if you're local, come on by. You've been at a couple times. You know what it's all about.
Oh, it's great. You're going to have a great time.
Doing quad feature. Got four movies going, so you get to pick your poison and see some wild movies.
Yeah, man. Where can they find all the information about Midnight Madness?
Yeah, so follow me on Instagram at @tape_hell and see what I got coming up for Midnight Madness.
Yeah, man. And you got a show coming up on Saturday, March 16th at 10 p.m. Little bit of a St. Paddy's Day lineup here. You got Rawhead Rex, Subconscious Cruelty, Leprechaun, and Begotten. You can go full St. Paddy's Day with a Rawhead and Leprechaun double feature, or you can go super dark with Subconscious Cruelty and then lighten it up with some Leprechaun, or do some Rawhead Rex and then fall into the void with Begotten. It's a hell of a lineup, and it's so fun to pair all these different films together all the time for these shows. So grab your tickets now from Basie Center Cinemas on 36 White Street in Red Bank, New Jersey, and we'll see you there. So yeah, that's it. That's Printer's Devil. Let us know what you thought about this episode in the comments, but until next time, I'm Joel Escola.
I'm Sean O'Rourke.
And I'm Chris Barr.
Tales from the Dark Side is always there, waiting for us to watch it, waiting for us to hit play. Until next time, try to find it on DVD and watch along with us.